It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Last month, The Washington Post columnist Stephen Pearlstein unleashed a warning that made some people stand up and take notice, and some people lash out that he was being a party pooper. The title of the piece is Beware the Mother of All Credit Bubbles, and in it he warns that the financial system is again on the verge of collapse, this time not from repackaged housing loans, but from corporations who are borrowing in order to buy back their own shares. It sounds complicated, and we're going to try and break it down for you. William Lozonik is Professor Emeritus of Economics at the University of Massachusetts Lowell. He is President of the Academic Industry Research Network, and he's researched and written extensively about stock buybacks and their economic consequences. He won the 2014 Harvard Business Review McKinsey Award for his groundbreaking piece about the topic called Profits Without Prosperity. That kind of tells you where he's coming from. Welcome to the show, William.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm good. So more than a decade ago, Americans borrowed themselves into a bubble. Now the economy is doing well. A lot of economists have pointed out that this growth can't sustain, that we are overheated. Are you one of those people?
Well, yeah, whether it's a bubble or not is a question, because the stock buybacks have been going on since the mid-1980s and weakening American industry, taking wages and jobs away from workers in order for companies to prop up their stock prices. So it's nothing new. That actually, the financial crisis of 2008-2009 was caused by the subprime lending market and basically giving loans to people who couldn't afford it or were made unable to afford them. But alongside that, there was an increase of about a quadrupling for the S&P 500 of their stock buybacks between 2003-2007, and that further weakened those companies when the crisis came. And that's going on again. What else is going on is another question, because there is a lot of financialization in the economy as a whole, a lot of the old gambling that on derivatives that
right.
Has created problems in the past. But I think I agree with that Pearlstein article that this phenomenon, not only of buybacks, but of companies borrowing money to do the buybacks, creates a real weakness in the U.S. economy.
I want to go back to 2008 for a moment. The subprime lending issue was kind of fueled, though, by the fact that there was a lot of money in the economy and people needed ever more risky investments to package. Is that true?
Well, yeah. So I think that there's in an advanced economy like the United States, once people are working and have a lot of savings, companies are making money, there's always a lot of money in the economy looking for a return on a portfolio investment. And, that's been true for decades. That's not new. What happens, however, is that you create a sector of the economy that has, in fact, become richer and more powerful over time, that has as its job basically to find those higher returns, and those returns often come at the expense of actually generating the products and creating the jobs that that kind of make the economy prosperous. So that's actually what creates at least the potential for a crisis, whether it's a bubble that bursts or it's just a long-term stagnation. That's the basic problem. And so we can't take that much money out of the economy, extract it for people who are just trying to get money on the money they have, if we're not creating value in the companies that are the real economy and that are hiring people every day to do work and paying them decent wages and giving them careers. That's unsustainable.
Okay, so talk to me about what stock buybacks are and what they're supposed to do for the company.
Yeah, okay. So companies trying to make a profit, and if they can sell competitive products on the market and at a reasonable cost, they can have profits. And then when you have profits, you can sustain yourself as a company. And what companies are supposed to do first and foremost with those profits is reinvest them back into the company, into productive capabilities of the company so that it can remain competitive in the future, because today's competitive products are not necessarily tomorrow's competitive products. And also pay workers higher wages, maybe give them more job security, better benefits. Okay, that's not getting to stock buybacks yet. But then there may be some money that is left over once you've done that. And traditionally what companies do is they pay shareholders who hold shares in the company dividends. And you get a yield on the dividend for holding the shares. But in addition, companies, and not instead of dividends, but often on top of dividends, companies have started doing repurchasing their own shares. And what they're doing, by and large, is telling the broker, we want to buy back this week $100 million of shares per day. And they're not going to do that every day throughout the year, but there's some times when they decide to do that. The broker will then create a demand for those shares. And that in itself will push the stock price of the company up because you're creating more demand in the market. And so that's what a stock buyback is, basically, and it's creating more demand for your stock on the market. And in my view, it's a manipulation of the market. It's basically a way in which companies can use their profits to manipulate their stock prices.
So when did stock buybacks become a thing?
Okay, so companies were doing them on a small scale before the 1980s, and during the 1970s, there were lots of newspaper articles, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, other places would say, well, you know, they actually said, what are the companies doing? They're manipulating their stock prices. But in 1981, Ronald Reagan became president on a platform of deregulation, and he appointed a guy from Wall Street named John Shadd to be the chair of the Securities and Exchange Commission, which is supposed to regulate the financial markets, including elimination of fraud and manipulation on the stock market. And Shadd then basically turned the Securities and Exchange Commission from a regulator of the stock market into a promoter of the stock market and the financial markets more generally. And I think that's still the case today, unfortunately. And part of that was in November 1982, really under the radar with very little public recognition of what was going on, there was a rule called 10b-18, which was obscure until people like me started writing about it, which basically gave companies a license to manipulate their stock price on a massive scale. And it's not that the stock buybacks of these open market repurchases that I described before were illegal previously, but the Securities and Exchange Commission was trying to regulate them. There was a previous proposal to regulate them, which was more stringent than this rule of 10b-18. But 10b-18, which was adopted in November 1982, is very permissive. And basically what it does is it says that on any single day, a company can repurchase on the open market up to 25% of the average daily trading volume for the previous 4 weeks, and without being any fear of being charged with manipulation. Now, for today, for Apple, which is an extreme case because of its high valuation and volume of its trading in its shares, that's about $1.5 billion a day. For Microsoft, under this rule, without being any fear of being charged manipulation, it's about $500 million a day. For many other companies, it's around $100 million, large companies, $100 million, $200 million a day. So they have a way of trying to boost their stock price as a result of this. Now, one other thing about that rule 10b-18, which now is being debated in Congress, largely thanks to Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin, who's in exposing this practice, it's a safe harbor, that 25% of the average daily trading volume on any one day, so that if you go over that, you're not necessarily manipulating the stock price unless the SEC decides to investigate you and say, okay, we think you are. But the problem is that also as part of that rule, they didn't require that companies report the exact days on which they're doing stock buybacks. So the SEC has no data on whether companies are exceeding.
Okay, so let me get this straight, though. So why is companies have gotten a tax break, and this is what I'm sort of reading here. Companies have gotten a tax break. They are using that tax break to buy back their stocks with the hope that that will make the stocks their stocks more valuable. It making their stocks more valuable? And why? And how does it hurt them long term? To buy back stocks rather than invest in the company.
Right. Okay. So first of all, there's the recent massive tax cuts that Republicans gave to individuals and also to corporations are supposed to spur investment in the economy. And it's quite clear that the level of a corporation, and this is something that the Senate Democrats have recognized, that the tax cut is being used to do stock buybacks. Now, that wouldn't have happened if there hadn't been this long history of doing stock buybacks already. So it was already a foregone conclusion that this is the way the companies behave because they've been behaving like this and been allowed to behave like this for over three decades. So what this recent tax cut did, and thanks to, again, Tammy Baldwin in the lead and the Senate Democrats lining up behind her, has exposed is this practice in the context of a massive tax cut that's supposed to create investment. Now, what companies do with the money, the profits, is critical to the performance of the economy. And it's not simply whether they invest in plant and equipment. It's much more fundamentally whether they reward workers for hard work, pay them higher wages over time, give them job security, give higher benefits. And companies used to do that in the United States. They used to do that up into the 1980s and even into the 1990s. But companies don't do that anymore. And so what we see at the aggregate level or the macro level is extreme income inequality. We see stagnating wages even when the economy is booming. We see a lot of job instability. People don't really have careers. They get a job, then they lose the job, and maybe they're out of the job for a while. We see a lot of downward mobility of people in the economy. We even see lowered life expectancy of people, and in this case has been documented over the last number of years, white males with high school education or less.
Right.
A lot of damage that's done that I think goes back to this problem that companies are basically not using their profits to keep the people who help to make those profits employed. And we see that all around us. And so this kind of thing that people didn't really know what it was, hopefully now they do. Stock buybacks is really at the core of that problem.
We're going to get into this in a moment. We are talking about maybe a credit bubble that is coming up in terms of corporate borrowing and stock buybacks, which are underlying that. We're going to get back to that and take your calls, 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org is the email address. We'll be back in a moment. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Are we creating another credit bubble that may burst the U.S. and global economies? Our guest today is talking about the credit bubble and about stock buybacks. William Lozonik is a professor emeritus of economics at the University of Massachusetts Lowell. We are taking your calls. What do you think the government needs to do to monitor credit markets so they don't have another recession? Are you in favor of rolling back Dodd-Frank? Do you have a question for our guest? The number is 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org is the email, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Professor Luzonic, I want to get to this. Corporations are getting tax cuts. They are making it so that they could buy their stocks back. Some people say that that's exactly what they should do because they have a fiduciary responsibility to the people who buy their stocks, who are the owners of their companies, not necessarily to their workers. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, there's a lot of debate over that, and I think the responsibility of the company is to invest in its productive capabilities and generate profits as a result of that. And to do that, you have to have workers who are motivated, workers who are trained, workers who get experience and who are retained in the company. And that's not only where the profits of a company come from, that's where the prosperity of the economy comes from. So if you're going to start arguing that shareholders are the ones who have to get all the money that's in the company as those profits are being made, you're going to just have a weak economy. And then you can get into the legal arguments about who the company has a fiduciary duty to. Well, it has a duty to the under the business judgment rule to on the part of executives to invest in the company, to make decisions that actually keep that company competitive in its industries. And stock buybacks are doing just the opposite of that.
So stock buybacks actually hurt companies long term.
And, I could go on and on about how that's going on. I can mention two cases which people in Wisconsin are sure aware of. One is Kimberly-Clark, which has been closing plants and costing jobs in profitable branches of its factories in Wisconsin, and it had record profits in 2017. And over the last decade, 2008 to 2017, it's done $11.4 billion in buybacks in addition to $7.5 billion in dividends. Those together come to 113% of its profits. So it's actually eating into its capital, and that's when companies can do that, if they take on debt or if they lay off workers and still can sell the product. So that's one case. The other case of a company that has been greatly weakened itself through stock buybacks over the last couple of decades is Harley-Davidson, which is in the news, of course, a lot, Wisconsin company. So you can just find example after example of that. And the problem is that...
Is this maybe why Harley... there's the tariffs, and we've talked about that, but is this maybe why Harley is building more manufacturing plants overseas? Because they've weakened themselves with bad financial decisions as they're running the company here?
Yeah, well, they're already in a weak position. So, of course, then if you get something like the Trump tariffs hitting them, they would be hurt anyway, but they're in a weakened position coming into that because of their own financial behavior. So I think people should focus on that financial behavior as a problem. And there's lots of things that can happen, fall in demand in the economy, a general crisis, et cetera, which we're talking about potentially can happen
right,
with all the debt that companies are accumulated.
So let me get to that debt for a second, though, because
This
is what's confusing to me. Corporations got a tax break. And so they were able to give the money from that tax break to buy back stocks, and yet their research is showing that they're actually borrowing the money to buy back those stocks. I'm not really sure what's going on here.
Yeah, so there's a number of things going on, and first of all, you have a company like Apple, which is one of the most cash-rich companies in history. They've done about $200 billion in stock buybacks since 2013, and about $80 billion of that was borrowed money. Now, why were they borrowing the money? Is because in the tax code there's incentive to leave the profits they make overseas abroad rather than repatriate it. So they were doing that. Now, the problem is that when a company like Apple, Cisco, company like Microsoft, and these companies that are making lots of profits, do stock buybacks and try to prop up their stock price. All other companies then are playing that game, and they have to try to compete in terms of stock price. So they start doing this. In addition, there's incentives to executives to do stock buybacks and the way they're paid, and I've written a lot on this on the structure.
Actually, we have a question on this. I'm going to go to Michael from Mequon. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you, and thanks for taking my call on a really interesting topic. What I'm curious about is to what degree these buybacks are driven by the fact that the compensation packages for senior executives are very often based around the bonuses structure. It's based around stock price. So, in fact, it ends up becoming an artificial mechanism to drive up stock price and give themselves a bigger bonus.
Michael, thank you for that. William Lozonik, you've written about this.
Yeah, so so technically it's not a bonus because there is something called the salary that they get, bonus that they get. Those are relatively small in the pay packages of executives. And what we found that, for example, for the 500 highest paid executives in the United States in 2016, that the average total compensation was about $32 million. About 84% of that was either gains from stock options or gains from stock awards. And what happens is basically when the stock price goes up, you exercise your options, sell the shares, or realize the gains. When stock price goes up and the awards vest, you make more money than you would have if the stock price had been lower. And that's really what's driving executive pay. And that's also been true for the last 20 or 30 years. Stock-based pay is really at the center of the incentive structure to which executives are responding. And there's no better way than to get your stock price up, even if it just stays up for a little while you're making hay, than to do stock buybacks, particularly since we don't actually know the exact days in which buybacks are being done. So no one's ever been prosecuted, no executive, for engaging in what is, in effect, insider trading, which is going on all the time, almost every day.
Thank you, Michael, for that question. I want to point out that the preliminary results, this is from NBC, from preliminary results from S&P Dow Jones indexes show that stock repurchases hit almost $190 billion in the first quarter of this year. That record was previously $172 billion, and that was just before the Great Recession. Is that a harbinger?
Yeah. It was, as I mentioned earlier, between 2003-2007, buybacks by the S&P 500 went from an average of about $300 million a year in 2003 to $1.2 billion a year, or $600 billion in total, in 2007. Now it's going even higher, and so it's on track to be maybe $800 billion for those companies in this year. And that'll keep the stock market going up, but is going to spell more harm and more layoffs and more job cuts, wage cuts, et cetera, for working people, and even in a boom. And, you know, that's a fundamental problem.
We are talking about maybe an impending credit bubble because corporations are buying back stocks, says our guest, rather than investing in their workers and in the future of their companies. We're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Joe from Milwaukee, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? What's your question?
I'm doing pretty well. My point would be that, like, it can depend if it's a good idea or not for a company to do a stock buyback, because one way it could be beneficial for a company is, in the short term, yeah, it costs a lot of money, but in the long term, they've got less dividends that they have to pay out, so they can keep more of their profits so they can invest in things in the future, in, say, more workers or more capital goods, that kind of stuff, by having less to pay dividends in the future. So just
What is your answer to that, William?
Yeah, first of all, the experience is that companies are, you know, gearing toward shareholder value in this way, are paying more dividends and doing more buybacks, and that doesn't stop. Secondly, if you buy your stock back at a very high price, which they're doing, it can be shown quite easily that you're doing a massive amount of buybacks to get, say, let's say, a potential of a 0.5% increase in dividend payments over time. It just doesn't work. The numbers just do not work. So the other critical point is that dividends aren't supposed to be something that's guaranteed to shareholders. Dividends are supposed to be something that is paid to shareholders when the company has made all the investments it needs to be competitive in the future and then has something left over. And where the ability to pay dividends comes from is from those competitive products, from those earnings that are generated, sustained over time. And today's competitive products might not be competitive tomorrow. So that's what a company is about. And stock buybacks completely subvert that whole role of the company, not only in its own sustained existence, but in the economy as a whole.
So in doing the research for this, in the Washington Post column that we cited at the top of the show, it shows that stock buyback, that companies that buy stocks back actually don't fare as well in terms of their stock price as companies that reinvest in their companies. Is that true?
Yeah, there a lot of research has shown that, and it's overwhelmingly, there's an end game here. If you keep just pumping money out of the company just to get your stock price up, eventually you won't have the earnings by which to do that. And when, that problem occurs, when you start going from a company that, because of the products you have that are generating earnings, to a company that can't generate new products that can be competitive and generate earnings, that varies by company. And we see a company, I can give you lots of examples, but a once iconic company in the United States, Motorola, was highly profitable in the mid-2000s and then spent about $8 billion in buybacks and went from being a major company to going nowhere. You have that going on with IBM, which has been a habitual repurchaser of its stock, and now I think recently it had earnings growth quarter on quarter, but it was having revenue growth, but it had revenue declines. I could go on and on and on.
Right.
And there are companies, Harley Davidson is one example of that, of a company that ultimately, if you don't just keep investing that money, you're not going to be competitive.
Corporations are buying things back. Partly they were, actually, this is my question. When we instituted Dodd-Frank, about 7-8 years ago, did that put a little bit of a pullback, a rein on stock buybacks, or did this slip through Dodd-Frank?
No, it didn't address it at all.
So now that the Trump administration and Congress is trying to weaken Dodd-Frank further, does this have any effect?
Well, Dodd-Frank really didn't address the problem of stock buybacks. It addressed the problem of gambling in the financial sector and tried to restrict that. But that, unfortunately, that wasn't part of the purview or the set of issues that Dodd-Frank addressed. And I guess the closest that you could say that it came to it was something that is now in place, which was the pay ratio disclosure rule, where now companies are now disclosing the ratio of their CEO pay to their median worker. That's a whole other set of issues because there's all kinds of problems with the way they're measuring CEO pay. But Dodd-Frank did not recognize this problem of the financialization of the corporation per se.
We are talking about stock buybacks and what corporations are doing with their money, the borrowing money to buy stocks back. Our guest today says that that is dangerous and will lead ultimately to the impairment of the company and the impairment of the economy. We're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. We have John from Rib Lake. John, welcome to the program.
Morning. Thank you for taking my call. My question is this. I am a pensioner. I'm on, it's the state pension plan, but that's my question is broader. All pensions, I'm sure, are watched over, operated by the investment board. Can this investment board police the way companies do such things as is being discussed in the program today? In other words, quit investing in the companies that are just playing with the rules with the reinvesting of stock.
That is a great question, John. So William, a company shareholders are getting dividends now in the short term. Many of those shareholders are people who actually work for the companies, but there are a lot of shareholders, whether they're institutional or individual, that think that these stock buybacks are a good idea. Can they have any influence?
Well, first of all, they're misinformed.
Okay.
So if I'm managing a pension fund and I'm not turning my stock, I'm not in the business of making capital gains by timing the buying and selling of stock, then I should be against stock buybacks, and I actually should want the government to rescind the Rule 10b-18 as Tammy Baldwin has proposed and just take that out of the game. And the reason is this, that I want dividends, which then can accrue tax-free in the accounts of the pensioners, the future pensioners. And I want the company to reinvest in its productive capabilities, in its products, so that if and when those shares are sold by the pension fund, they're likely to be at a higher price. And they're going to be at a higher price not because you did stock buybacks, but because you actually generated the competitive products that created the earnings and probably kept a lot of people employed and on their pensions much longer as a result of that. Stock buybacks are only benefiting people who are in the business of timing the buying and selling of shares, and that's basically Wall Street, investment bankers, hedge fund managers, and given the way I described executive pay, unfortunately, the top executives of the companies themselves. So people need to get wise to this practice and that it's not good for the ordinary shareholder. It's not good for people who are holding their shares or for whom pensions are a part of the income, are going to generate the income that can support them in retirement. And the sooner people recognize that, the better.
We are talking about a pending possible credit bubble fueled by stock buybacks and corporate borrowing. We're going to be back to talk about a little deeper into the economy and asking if we are headed into another recession. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're talking with economist William Lozonik about the worry that corporate debt may lead to another recession. We are also taking your phone calls, 800-642-1234. ideas@WPR.org is the email address. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Do you work for a company that used to tax cut to buy, that used its tax cut to buy back its own shares? Or maybe you are the company. Why did you do it? Did you use the tax cut for something other than buying back shares? If so, how did you use it? William Lozonik, let's talk about collateralized loan obligations, also known as CLOs. What are they, and how are they figuring into this?
Well, the basically the leveraging of borrowed money to gamble on derivatives is something that's been going on since the 1980s. I think that that's going on anyway. How it figures into it is this, that what people have observed is that over time, Wall Street, or the financial sector, the financial part of the economy, has become bigger and bigger in terms of profits in the economy, in terms of activity measured in GDP in the economy. And you have to ask, why is that the case? And one of the prime reasons is that as companies that are part of what we call the real economy are employing people and generating goods and services that are selling on the market and making profits, that money is being pumped out of companies to the financial sector, giving it more and more money with which to play its games, which to gamble. And a big part of that is the payment of stock buybacks on top of dividends. So for the S&P 500 companies for the last decade, the most recent data we have is 2007-2016, they spent $4 trillion, $4.0 trillion on buybacks, which was about 54% of their profits, and another $3.9 trillion on dividends, which is about 37% of their profits. So that money, people are going to work every day creating the profits, profits, and that money is just kind of gushing out of the companies to be used basically by the financial sector. And a lot of it is going to the people at the top, the richest households. And, of course, this is the other problem in the U.S. economy that has been much noticed is the extreme concentration of income at the top,
right,
what Bernie Sanders called the billionaire class. And, how do they make their money? Well, more and more of them are making their money by just looting these business corporations. I call it the basically the largely legalized looting of the industrial corporation that's going on.
Okay, so but my question is here, CLOs are playing a role here in the same way it seems to me that CDOs, collateralized debt obligations, played in the financial crisis of 10 years ago. So explain to us what a CLO is.
Well, what it is basically just taking the loans and packaging the loans and selling the loans on the market as the way they did with, it's... I'm not sure exactly, what the point of the question is in terms of buybacks. It's a little far from.
Right, but is this helping to create a credit bubble?
Yeah, no, I think there may be a credit bubble being created, but it's whereas I said I agreed with the Pearlstein article that that all this debt was creating a lot of vulnerability. Whether it will create the kind of crash we had in 2007-2009 when, in fact, that debt was based on people being able to, who couldn't afford to own homes, pay the debt on those homes is another question, because now we're talking about the debt of companies in the U.S. economy as a whole. And whether something else will have to happen, and I frankly don't know what that is, will have to happen to make them so weak that they can't pay off that debt. Now, of course, if there was all of a sudden a big spike in interest rates, and interest rates are going up, that could create a lot of problems for everybody at once, and we could end up in a crisis. But I really don't have a scenario that, in my mind, of a crisis that that is on the horizon. What I have in my mind is an economy that for three decades now has been concentrating income at the top and depressing the wages and the career opportunities of working people. And that is fundamentally the problem. So this problem of now companies being addicted to stock buybacks and being so addicted and so competitive of it that they're taking on more and more debt to do it, is adding to that more fundamental problem from my point of view.
We are talking about the financial health of Wall Street and stock buybacks in particular, and wondering if we are going into another credit bubble. We are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Mark from Madison, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. So I would begin by saying remember banks that paid interest and remember low-risk, good-paying CDs. These are gone. And that's meant that investors have tended to shift to more risky things like buying stocks that pay dividends. To what extent has that shift in what's held by investors accelerating this effect of increased buybacks?
William?
Yeah, so there's two sides to risk. One is, what kind of return you're trying to generate on some kind of security. And the other side is the ability, to generate that return. And so you could have companies, in this case, that are quite stable, but trying to get their stock price up and that become more risky because particularly if they take on more debt and they that in itself, it makes the holding of shares, in my view, a much more risky proposition. But if in addition, as I argue, the very process of buying back stock is one that's weakening the company in terms of its reinvestment and productive capabilities and the competitive products in the future, then it's a double whammy. You have companies that are both becoming much more risky proposition in terms of their internal financial structure and are losing what it is that makes a company successful ultimately, and it's not its stock price, it's products that it can sell on the market. And so the research that I do goes into these companies and starts seeing the damage that is done by this financial behavior. And then when we look at it and we look at it added up over the whole economy, we see all kinds of damage to working people that's going on in terms of lost jobs, in terms of truncated career opportunities. We see a concentration of income at the top that increases the power of people who have a lot of money, not only to change the political process, which you've seen going on, but actually to go into the companies and use these war chests to demand even more money out of the companies. Then we have, things like industries we've studied where it has other effects, like pharmaceutical drugs, where, as most people know, in the United States, we pay twice the price for drugs as anywhere else in the world. And for decades, the pharmaceutical companies have argued that they need the high drug prices so they can accelerate investment in R&D and innovation. And what we've documented through our research is that that's basically a lie. And the lie is shown when we see that, in fact, companies like Merck and Pfizer for decades have been spending well over 100% of their profits paying dividends and buying back their stock and increasingly relying on stock buybacks to pump up their stock prices, becoming less innovative in the process. and we end up paying high drug prices, have less innovation, and for the sake of company pharmaceutical companies that can, like other companies, prop up their stock price. So a lot of the research we do goes into particular sectors of the economy and looks at the damage that it done. And I could go on and on and on about that.
I have to tell you, that's actually very interesting, given the high price of drugs and how that is affecting people in the U.S., that the argument that the drug companies, the pharmaceutical companies have given has turned out to be not necessarily true. But we're getting emails, and I got to tell you, man, our listeners are not really that optimistic. Roland in Lancaster says that we are in a variation of the same dynamics leading to 2008, greed, bad investing, and crashing. Gary from Iron River says, of course we're headed into another recession. We just have no idea when, how deep it will be, and what will cause it. Economists and government bankers and regulators have been notoriously bad at predicting them. Is that pessimism kind of like it's all rolling downhill, it's all gathering moss, it's now inevitable?
Well, I think if we don't do something about what's going on in these companies, which is not, you know, company here or there, but it's pretty systemic, then we have a problem. I think we have a big political problem already because of the neglect of this issue of what's happening to the American worker. I think that people need to recognize that ultimately, as most people do, that, you know, that the jobs they have are the foundation of their economic security and the futures of their children. And those jobs are being put in jeopardy every day, and this has been happening for quite a long time, really since the late 1970s, and it's been happening in different ways. But this, what I talk about, the financialization of the corporation with stock buybacks at the center of it, are really critical to understand in order to, if you want to turn this thing around.
Okay, so my question is, you mentioned Tammy Baldwin a few times. She is, of course, Wisconsin's one of Wisconsin's senators. What does she want to do? Is she likely to be able to do it, say, if the Democrats do get the majority?
Well, that I don't know what she likes to do. I mean, she does have a piece of legislation in the Senate, which I think was introduced in March, called the Reward Work Act, which would rescind Rule 10b-18, which is the rule that was adopted in November 1982, which allows these stock buybacks. And if that happened, then all these buybacks would be potentially open to charges of manipulation. So that's one side of it. The other side of it is that the Reward Work Act looks to put have one-third of the board members of every public company be representative of workers, sort of a type of German co-determination system, which works extremely well there. And so that workers can sort of get informed and be aware of what's happening in their companies and try to influence decision-making power in moving in a different direction. Whether that has a chance of passing, even with a Democrat-controlled Congress, is another question, because
right.
It is quite radical in the American context. But it does raise the issues. And more recently, on the end of June, there was a letter sent by Senator Baldwin, signed by, I think, 20 other Senate Democrats, which to the Securities and Exchange Commission, asking that Rule 10b-18 be opened up to public comment.
We are going to have to end this conversation here. We should note that this stop buybacks were not in Dodd-Frank when it was a Democratic Congress. So this is an uphill battle for Senator Baldwin. We've been talking to William Lozonik, who is the professor emeritus of economics at the University of Massachusetts Lowell. He's also the president of the Academic Industry Research Network. Thank you very much, William.
Thank you very much. Bye.
It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.